Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jake.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it!
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road, and you know. Anyway, so welcome. This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2002 Brett Ratner masterpiece, Red Dragon.
Yes, we are.
First, do we have any housekeeping?
So at the time we're recording this, you've released the first three Star Trek pods, and they're quite enjoyable. I really, Star Trek 3 was the last one I listened to, and it was very nostalgic for me to listen to it, because that was really the first Star Trek movie that I remember. So I had no idea what was really going on. I think later went back and watched The Wrath of Khan, and that was awesome. And then I saw Star Trek 4. I think we all went to see Star Trek 4 in the theater as a family. And that was a fun one to see in the theater. But yeah, I always liked Star Trek 3. I'm glad you and Jason had positive things to say about it. I didn't realize it was not well received.
It just gets lumped in with all the odd number ones. I mean,
the most disturbing thing about that podcast, though, was hearing Jason talk about his notebooks that he keeps for his movie watching. It just brought back so many memories of following in his footsteps at school and never being able to live up to my teacher's expectations.
Because he had a reputation for being a little retentive?
Yeah, no, he was always like the smartest one in his class, always got straight A's. You know, and then I came along and, I was blind and had horrible study habits.
Well, there's that.
And it may have been a chicken or the egg type of thing. Not the being blind part, but the bad study habits. That may have just been petulant rebellion because I knew I couldn't live up to his reputation. So I went the other way.
Yeah, well, that's always good. I say if you're going to have a rebellion, have it with full petulance.
Yeah. But just hearing him talk about how many notes he takes, and I take zero, so made me feel very inadequate.
Yeah, well,
just like growing up, it was great.
I did find a new podcast though I'd recommend. It's called The Canon, and it's two film critics who argue whether or not a movie, or sometimes it's one movie versus another movie, should belong in the canon of great movies. For instance, the first one they have is Goodfellas, and they argue quite forcefully on either side of having that being in the canon of good movies.
That seems like the right side to be on.
Well, you'll have to listen to it. It's very interesting. I recommend it. There are some where they agree, which again, like we found in our podcast, doesn't make for as exciting conversation, although they usually have different reasons why they recommend them. And when they do the versus episodes, like they did The Lion King versus Beauty and the Beast, only one can go in the canon. So that was kind of fun.
The answer better be The Lion King.
I think that was what the popular notion was, because after they do the podcast, then you get to vote on it if you like. And so the listeners...
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. And like they did Alien versus Aliens. And that and that's a good one, because when you think about it, like in nostalgia reasons, and you haven't seen either movie in a while, you might have one gut answer. Then when you go and watch them, you might have a totally different answer.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. Speaking of smooth transitions, Red Dragon. Now, it's been actually a couple weeks since we've done Manhunter, but I didn't realize there were so many connections between the two movies, besides obviously the source material. Dino De Laurentiis was one of the producers for both movies. The director of photography, Dante Spinotti, did both of them. He also was a director of photography for L.A. Confidential, Heat, The Last of the Mohicans, The Insider, and Wonder Boys. And he works with both Michael Mann and Brett Ratner a lot.
Oh, good for him to keep working.
Yeah, which is a crazy combination of people to have, the Brett Ratner-Michael Mann connection. Because I don't think they could be much more different.
I agree with you there.
So are we going to do this as strictly a Red Dragon as compared to Manhunter episode?
I'm not sure we can avoid it.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I think it's not bad because pretty much there's only a couple differences. They're pretty significant differences, but the main storyline is pretty much the same. The actors, it's amazing. The actors in Red Dragon are really quality. I mean, like, pretty much all the actors are really superb just on paper. And some of them...
It is an all-star cast on paper.
It really is. Yeah. And I mean, okay, I know why they did Red Dragon, and they only did it 1 year after Hannibal. They did it because they wanted Anthony Hopkins to play Hannibal Lecter in all of the core movies.
Yeah, can I just give my initial thoughts on this movie real quick?
Sure.
Fuck this movie. I was so mad after watching it.
Really? Okay, well, I actually have a chart that lists the characters, and then I kind of gave them a vote for who was better in each movie. And you might be surprised what some of my conclusions are.
I probably will be, because I did. I watched this. I think I watched it the day after we recorded the Manhunter podcast. So they're both very fresh in my mind.
Did you come at it with an open heart?
I think I did, because I remember watching Red Dragon when it first came out on video, and I had not seen Manhunter in a really long time, and I remember being relatively ambivalent about it. I didn't think it was great, because I remember thinking Hannibal wasn't that great either. I mean, it was obviously a paycheck movie, especially for Anthony Hopkins, but I didn't remember hating it. But I watched it this time and I hated it. Terrible.
Oh, that's funny, because I didn't hate it at all. I thought it was a lesser movie. I thought it was a different kind of movie. And it made me question the rest of these movies we're going to watch, because I'm very curious to watch Silence of the Lambs again. And the question I have is Hannibal Lecter's accent as crazy in Silence of the Lambs as it is in this movie?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm really worried. I have been from the start of this endeavor. I'm really worried Silence of the Lambs isn't going to hold up.
That's going to be a shame. I'm going to go into it with an open heart, because I totally remember liking Silence of the Lambs. But whereas getting ready for Manhunter, I bought Red Dragon on Audible so I can listen to it and compare the stories and just kind of get back into the feel of it. I was there on the page to buy Silence of the Lambs and couldn't pull the trigger, because I'm like, I don't know if I want to get all wrapped up. And actually, it's funny, because Manhunter, Michael Mann took some liberties with the script, he took some liberties with the story, the novel, that Brett Ratner was very, very, very true to the novel.
Yeah, that's what I realized after you described some of the differences between Manhunter and the book Red Dragon.
And I think it was a mistake. I mean, that was what he was being paid to do. I don't have even any kind of animosity toward Brett Ratner. He was getting paid to do a certain thing, and this was that thing.
Yeah. This movie, God damn it. This is such a, it's a shame. I mean, I mean that like in a very literal sense. Like, they should be shamed. The people who made this movie should be shamed. It lacks any sort of creativity. It lacks any sort of passion in the performances. It's terrible. They don't introduce anything new in this movie.
You're right about that. Well, I would argue they're going to introduce one thing in the movie, but I think it doesn't work well. But when it comes down to it, my takeaway from this is that Manhunter, and by the way, I have watched now the first two episodes of the Hannibal TV series, and we're going to do a whole episode on the on that series that first year, and I am really enjoying it. But unfortunately, this means that now I have 3 Lecters, 3 Grahams, 3 Chilterns, 3 Crawfords, and I'm comparing all of them in my head.
Yeah.
Plus, I cannot watch the Hannibal TV show, and the guy who plays Will Graham reminds me so much of Alton Brown.
No, wow. I never got Alton Brown.
To spoiler from what my feelings are, I think he's the best Graham of them all.
I agree.
Yeah. I have.
I will also spoil that I think the Hannibal on the television show is the best one of them all.
I'm getting there. I was worried about his accent, too. And then I realized how ridiculous the accent on Anthony Hopkins is in Red Dragon. I have no idea where the character even comes from. You know, the guy is supposed to be what? Like, he grew up in Eastern Europe or at least in Germany, maybe? Well, we'll find out during Hannibal Rising.
Yeah, I think Iron Curtain territory.
Yeah, so you think he maybe has some Slavic roots or even some European roots, but it's almost like he has a weird Southern accent. And in Silence of the Lambs, hopefully, he puts on the Southern accent only to taunt Clarice, but there's no reason to taunt Will Graham. He doesn't have a Southern accent.
In this movie, he barely has any affectation in his voice at all.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. He's, you know, I also thought to myself, when did I stop liking Ed Norton?
When you watched this movie.
Maybe so. Well, let me run down.
I had similar thoughts, by the way. I was like, for a lot of these people, I was like, are these actors actually good? Is Ed Norton actually good? Is Anthony Hopkins? Harvey Keitel, when was he good? I don't understand.
I know. I had similar thoughts. So let's, let me just explain the plot differences for those keeping score at home. The film actually opens with Hannibal Lecter at the symphony. And he is wincing.
Sporting a ridiculous ponytail.
Yes. Yes, he is. Yeah, well, he is also wincing at a ridiculously horrible flautist. And we cut to sometime later when he's hosting a dinner for the symphony board, and he feeds them the missing flautist, pretty much.
Think to yourself that every day is your last. The hour to which you do not look forward will come as a welcome surprise. As for me, when you want a good laugh, you will find me in a fine state, fat and sleek, a true hog of Epicurus's herd.
And we find you cribbing lines from Horace as well.
Well done, John.
I must say, Hannibal, speaking for the rest of the herd, I'm sorry, for the symphony board, that these little soirees of yours are always the highlight of our year.
Yeah.
You're too kind.
I do feel a bit guilty enjoying such a lovely evening when one of our musicians is still listed as a missing person.
Yes, poor fellow. Shall I confess something wicked? I can't help feeling just the tiniest bit, well, relieved. Mm. It sounds awful, I know, but let's face it, so does the man's playing.
Oh. Hannibal, confess. What is this divine-looking amuse-bouche?
If I tell you, I'm afraid you won't even try it. Oh. Bon appétit.
Bon appétit.
Again, his voice distracts me. And his ponytail distracted me. And the fact that he is not any younger than he was in any of the other movies distracts me.
He looks about 10 years older.
Yes, yes. And he was, actually, as it turns out. But Will Graham shows up, and I thought, wow, okay, this is going to be great, because they just dive right in. They don't explain much. We get Will Graham showing up saying, hey, we're wrong about this killer's profile. I think I know why we're wrong. And then Graham figures out that Lecter is the killer he's been hunting, and Lecter attacks him and nearly kills him. And there's some nice dialogue, but it's the only nice dialogue in this whole first section because the rest of it is so hammy. But then Graham is able to survive and shoot Lecter, and then we immediately cut to the opening credits, which, if I remember correctly, the credits are over Dollar Hyde's scrapbook, right?
Yes, which is filled up mostly with clippings of Hannibal Lecter.
Well, this is clearly Hannibal Lecter's movie. What I wrote down in my notes is that Manhunter is all about Graham. Lecter is one kind of monster and Dollar Hyde is another kind of monster, but it's this cat and mouse game where Graham is chasing monsters, trying not to become one. Dragon is all about, Dollar Hyde being a sympathetic character, Lecter being the whole brains of the operation, and Graham being the mouse, with Lecter being the cat in the cat and mouse. Like, Graham doesn't really figure out anything in this movie on his own.
No, he's so impotent in this movie.
Yeah, it's not great. Although, again, there were some sparks of some things I was looking for. I mean, I thought, oh, there's some things that I thought worked really well. I really like, by the way, Dollar Hyde's scrapbook, even though it is full of Lecter. I just like that whole aesthetic. And if I was a person with lots of money, I would like to own that particular prop. Because it is super creepy.
You could just make one.
I could, yeah. But the time. Maybe Jason could make one for me. That actually probably would actually work out better.
Yeah, he could donate his podcast notebooks and
scribble
out some stuff and use a glue stick to put in some newspaper clippings. It'd be great.
Just find an old book to paste all that in. That'd be fine. Hey, he lives in a part of the world where they have antiques.
No, that's true.
Actually, Travis is in a part of the world that has even more antiques.
And maybe even still has newspapers.
Perhaps, yes. And then our listener in Finland has even access to more antiques. So if anybody wants to send us an antique empty scrapbook, just send it our way. Send me an email at antiquescrapbook@notinacreepyway.
And what about our new South American listeners?
Oh, the new South American listeners, especially from Bolivia? Yeah, welcome. Let's see. Sorry, back to the... Yeah, I want to own that prop, by the way. But, you know, okay, so the opening credits with Dollar Hyde's scrapbook is kind of creepy and fun, and it's like kind of the new title sequence that we're used to with the cool television shows. And I think I first noticed a title sequence like this in the movie Spawn. I also remember it being the only good part of the movie Spawn.
Oh, there's some good stuff to Spawn.
But...
mainly his voice.
Well, yeah, we'll have to rewatch Spawn. So I like I said, I liked that title sequence. I thought it was nice and creepy and kind of set the stage. But then I remembered how Manhunter starts, and nothing is as creepy as the Dollar Hyde opening, like of the video where he's walking through the house.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
I mean, that is truly frightening. So round one has to go to Manhunter. And then next in Red Dragon, we have the scenes of Crawford showing up. And again, it's Harvey Keitel, so it's weird. He's not as natural as Dennis Farina was. I have to give it to Farina.
And he's trying to do like an Atlanta accent, too.
I don't know what accent he's doing either. I don't understand where the accent went in this movie.
You've got a beautiful setup here, bro.
Yeah, it's good.
You know why I'm here?
Yeah, I can guess.
How much do you know?
Just what was in the Miami Herald and the Times. Two families killed a month apart in their homes. Birmingham and Atlanta. Circumstances were similar.
Not similar, the same.
What have you kept out of the papers?
He smashed his mirrors and uses the pieces. Wears latex gloves so we've got no prints. Size 11 shoe. He's not too comfortable with locks. Pried open the patio door in Birmingham, used a glass cutter in Atlanta. Oh, and his blood's AB positive.
Somebody hurt him?
Nope. We typed him from semen and saliva. He's a secretor. Tell me something, Will. You knew what this was. Did you ever consider picking up the phone and maybe giving me a call?
You've got all the people you need. You've got Dortmund up at Harvard. You got Bloom in Chicago.
And I've got you down here fixing fucking boat motors.
Yeah, I like fixing boat motors. I wouldn't be very useful to you anyway. I don't think about this stuff anymore.
Really? The last two we had, you caught.
Yeah, by doing the same things that you and the other guys are doing.
It's not entirely true, Will. It's the way you think.
Oh, come on. There's been a lot of bullshit about the way I think.
I've got technicians that can examine evidence, but you've got that other thing. Imagination, projection, whatever. I know you don't like that part of it.
Yeah, you wouldn't like it either.
What happened, Harvey? What happened?
So we have the scene of Crawford showing up, and he brings Will into the case. And I thought that the scene in the Atlanta PD where Graham comes up and answers questions and explains that this killer is not going to stop.
We're grateful for the Bureau's involvement. They have a great deal of expertise in this area. In particular, Investigator Graham does. Isn't that right, Jack?
Yes, sir. Anything you want to add, Mr. Graham? Why don't you come on up to the front, please?
Mrs. Leeds and Mrs. Jacoby were the primary targets. The others were killed just to complete his fantasy. Now, I know that might be hard to accept, given what you saw, but this was not random. This wasn't some killing frenzy. He was never out of control. These attacks were highly organized, the women carefully chosen. We don't know how he's choosing them or why. They lived in different states and they never met. But there is some connection. There's some common factor, and that's the key. Find out what that is, and we'll save lives. Because this one is going to go on and on until we get smart or we get lucky. He won't stop.
Why not?
Because it makes him God. Would you give that up?
I thought that was a wonderful scene. It's actually a better scene than in Manhunter. And in this movie, it's not Will who demands to see Lecter. It's Crawford that's twisting Will's arm to go do it. Which I thought was, it was less subtle than in Manhunter. But I thought that was good. But unfortunately, in this movie, there's actually, and I can't remember which site, maybe it was Slate, that had a side-by-side video of the scene where Graham meets Lecter for the first time. Not for the first time, but in the cell. And they show the scene from Manhunter and the scene from Red Dragon side by side. And Michael Mann has such a deft touch. And Brett Ratner is basically just trying to copy Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, that's absolutely what he's trying to do. That's why there's no ounce of creativity in it. It's the exact same cell from Silence of the Lambs, which, you know, the first time we saw it in that movie, it was really creepy. You know, all the stone walls and like the plexiglass cage with the air holes in it. At least I had never seen a prison cell look like that before Silence of the Lambs. Yeah, so in Manhunter, when Michael Mann did something sort of visually interesting with the way he set up and blocked and shot the scene, even though with, you know, a typical looking jail cell, it was way more creative than just ripping off the set from Silence of the Lambs and not doing anything with it.
And actually they did less with it, as Crave Online pointed out when they were doing their movie versus movie review of these two movies. There was a lot of like submarine background noise that made the Silence of the Lambs cell with Lecter super creepy. And they didn't have any of that. They had like the facade, but it was like a false front of like a Western town. It was just a bad reproduction is what it was. And also, for all of the fact that the cell is super creepy in Red Dragon, because it's, again, the Silence of the Lambs cell with all the extra stuff to it, Graham is not really fazed by Lecter like he is in Manhunter. I mean, Will Graham has to run out and run down all those stairs and nearly throw up when he's done. And in this case, basically, and I think this was Ed Norton's choice, he actually fought Ratner for this, that he said that Graham would be an experienced detective, so he wouldn't be nearly as scared. So they compromised and just had him having a lot of sweat stains. But he picks up the phone and Jack asks him if he's okay. And he's like, yeah, I'm fine. And you believe it because he's not nearly as freaked out.
He's a flat line through the entire movie.
Yeah, well, for Lecter to be, I mean, for the monster to be scary, the person, the victim has to be scared. I mean, you can exactly. have, you know, you can have, well, what was the Rubber? Isn't that a movie where the tire is the monster? It's an actual...
Maybe. I've never seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either, but I've heard of it. And it's just a tire, literally a tire, not with even a wheel on it. And you can make something like that super scary just because of reactions to it by other people. Well, you could have a really, really super creepy... like spider monster that you spent lots of money on, or even like the Thing, practical effects, you know, some sort of Rob Bottin creation. And if the other actors are just laughing at it, it's not going to be scary at all. So this is where Ed Norton fails. Also a failure. We get to see Lecter so many more times in this movie, and that makes him less scary. Also familiarity and contempt and all, especially when he gets in that ridiculous 9-to-5 Dabney Coleman exercise yard thing.
Ah, that's exactly what I thought of too. And that was just a scene that was so cynically shoehorned into the movie just to give Lecter more screen time. Totally unnecessary.
Exactly. And I want to forgive Ratner because that's what he was paying to do. That was this whole movie. I don't know.
Now, can I say the one thing I'm most disappointed about in this movie?
Yes.
I was really looking forward to seeing a skinny Ed Norton flip a very chubby Philip Seymour Hoffman onto the hood of a car. turns out, did not happen.
No, not at all. But I am going to get to the parts of this movie that I actually liked. I thought that, again, in Tom Noonan's Francis Dolarhyde in Manhunter, he was a monster. You could kind of see, you were sympathetic because you could kind of see how he became a monster, but he was a monster. Ralph Fiennes' Francis Dolarhyde is really a sympathetic character. I mean, you feel sorry for him, which is okay. I mean, I thought it was fine. He did a great job, I thought.
Yeah, he was good. He wasn't... I didn't think he was nearly as terrifying, but he definitely had much more of an emotional arc to him.
I think to me, he wasn't as terrifying because I felt sorry for him.
Right.
Like, you never felt sorry for Tom Noonan.
Yeah. I don't know if that was just the force of his performance, because I think him and Philip Seymour Hoffman were definitely the best parts of this movie.
Oh, I'm gonna add one more. I thought Emily Watson's Reba was really good.
Yeah, I can go there. Yeah.
I really liked her performance.
I'm Francis Dolarhyde. I've come for the package of infrared.
All right. Put your back against the door and come forward 3 steps till you feel tile under your feet. And there's a stool just on the left. Same Mr. D who's head of tech services, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm Raven McLean. Just a second more and we'll get you some light. Okay, here we go. So, what do you need the IR for?
It's for the zoo. They want to photograph the nocturnal animals.
That's great. I love animals. I gotta warn you, though. This stuff is pretty sensitive. It can be mean to handle. But I guess I don't need to tell you that.
Hey, Reba. Oh, Mr. D. Whoa. I'm not interrupting anything here, am I?
No, Ralph.
Listen, Reba, it's starting to spritz outside. How about I give you a lift home?
You ride a motorcycle, Ralph. How's that going to help me with the rain?
Well, I thought maybe stop off someplace, have ourselves a little sundowner.
I've already got a ride.
That's cool. That's cool.
No problemo.
If there's anything I hate worse than pity, it's fake pity. Especially from a walking hard-on like Ralph Mandy. Sorry.
I have no pity.
She actually pulled it off better than Joan Allen did and was really kind of charming. And unfortunately, they kind of screwed up the ending of it, because to be true to the book means that Will doesn't save Reba at the end. Reba basically gets out on her own. Our Dolarhyde can't kill Reba, so she manages to escape the burning house all on her own.
Right.
I thought Ralph Fiennes was great. Unfortunately, I didn't like the scene where he had to go eat the painting. It was in the book, but I thought it was unnecessary. And it's a long movie. You could have cut that out.
Yes, absolutely.
Plus, it was ridiculous. I mean, watching him eat the painting was ridiculous. I thought that that Philip Seymour Hoffman was great. In fact, the part of the trivia is that Anthony Hopkins actually came onto the set to watch Philip Seymour Hoffman worked, even though they never had scenes together. So that's a pretty high compliment, I think.
I really enjoyed imagining that Hoffman's Freddie Lowndes was just what happened to Scotty J when he found his own way in life after Boogie Nights.
See, I haven't seen Boogie Nights. So
really?
Nope, we'll have to do that.
It's amazing.
I own it. I have the director's copy or whatever it's called.
We will definitely have to do it. It might be my favorite William H. Macy performance.
Oh, excellent. This Freddie Lowndes didn't have any more screen time than the other one, but this Lowndes gets the book treatment where Dolarhyde chews his lips off. I didn't think that the wheelchair scene was nearly as good in this as in Manhunter.
No, but Hoffman was way better.
Oh yeah, Hoffman was great. And in the scene where he's being shown the slideshow,
like a million, maybe.
Do you know who I am, Mr. Lowndes?
No. And I don't want to know. You know, believe me.
According to you, I'm a vicious, perverted sexual failure, a bottom feeding lowlife who's about to go down in flames. I think you know now, don't you?
Yes.
Do you understand what I'm doing, Mr. Lowndes?
No, but I'd like to. I really want to understand, and then all my readers could understand too.
I am not a man. I began as one, but each being that I change makes me more than a man, as you will witness.
I don't need to see you, no.
Oh, but you must, Mr. Lowndes. You're a reporter. You're here to report. Open your eyes and look at me.
No.
If you won't open them yourself, I'll staple your eyelids to your forehead.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Open your eyes!
Oh my dear God, Jesus.
You want to know what I am?
More than anything, I was afraid to ask.
Do you see now?
Yeah, I see. Oh, God.
This is Jacoby in human form. Do you see?
Yes.
Mrs. Leeds in human form. Do you see?
Yes.
Mrs. Jacoby changing.
Oh, my God.
Mrs. Leeds changing. Do you see? Mrs. Jacoby reborn. Do you see? Mrs. Leeds reborn. Do you see?
Please, no.
No? No what?
Not me. Not me.
Why did you write lies, Mr. Lowndes?
Graham told me to lie, Graham. It wasn't me.
Will you tell the truth now?
Yes.
About me. My work?
Oh, yes, yes.
My becoming?
Yeah, y'all. Yeah.
I am the dragon, and you call me insane. You are privy to a great becoming, and you recognize nothing. You are an ant in the afterbirth. It is in your nature to do one thing correctly. Before me, you rightly tremble. But fear is not what you owe me, Mr. Lowndes. You owe me all.
And this is trivia also, he also insisted that they actually glue him to the chair.
That sounds extremely unpleasant.
Yeah, it does. But he sells it, though.
Yeah, he does.
I thought that the grandmother character that's in the book, and he's using grandma's teeth or her dentures when he's doing the whole dragon thing. I thought it was too much psycho, and I thought it was kind of unnecessary. I mean, you need it for the end, because the end is kind of a fairly brutal ending as far as emotionally. But I thought the actual voiceover from Ellen Burstyn, you know, from such notable roles as Requiem for a Dream, another great movie that I perhaps never want to see again.
I have seen it more than once, and yeah, great movie. No reason to watch it twice.
No, I think I tried to watch it twice and I couldn't, because I knew where it was going, and it was like, this is going to be unpleasant.
By the way, have I mentioned how happy I am for the return of the Take Shelter opening?
Oh, yes, you did. I almost accidentally put, because I was reusing a lot of the Star Trek openings, because the music doesn't change too much. It changes at 4, so I changed it for 4, and I think I'll use just 4's opening for the rest of it. But the original 4 opening I made had the old clown quote in there. And I don't like the old clown quote either. I mean, I was actually sort of joking with Jason that I'll just, you know, because I want to change change your quote to 2 tears in a bucket, mother fuck it. But that doesn't really apply in any way, and it would just be poking at you, which is unnecessary and mean.
But an Anderson tradition.
Yeah, but I don't want to continue that kind of tradition. Okay, so, sorry. Back to Red Dragon. I thought that Chilton, it was nice to incorporate him back into this one. I mean, the Chilton character in Manhunter doesn't really do much. So just having the over-the-top performance of Anthony Held was really good. I was excited to see Mary Louise Parker as Molly Graham, and then I realized she wasn't going to have really anything to do, so I was disappointed.
Yeah, I'm not in on Mary Louise Parker. I don't think she's good.
I want to say she's been good in other stuff. I just can't think of any off the top of my head.
Yeah, she's really Keitel-ing it up nowadays.
Was Harvey Keitel in he was in Bad Lieutenant, right?
Yes.
That's what started his downward spiral, maybe. Although, yeah, because Bad Lieutenant was after Pulp Fiction. He was great in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah. He was good in Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, he was great in Reservoir Dogs. He even was pretty good in Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
He was apparently not good in Apocalypse Now because they canned his ass. and replaced him
with... He was really good in like a not easy to watch way in The Piano.
I've never seen that. I've been told many times, actually by Connie, to see it, and I have not done so. Again, it's a movie that I'm afraid I might feel something about, and I'm, you know, usually I want to escape into happy thoughts like murder.
You know what he was really good in? Another movie that I thought was really good that never want to see again. Last Temptation of Christ.
Oh, he was Christ?
He was Judas.
Ah. See, and
Willem Dafoe was Christ.
That's funny, because in Reservoir Dogs, Tim Roth was Judas.
Yes, but I don't think Harvey Keitel was Christ.
Nope. okay, some trivia here that you might appreciate. Do you know who Brett Ratner's first choice of the role of Reba was?
No.
Taya Leone.
Yikes.
Yep. Do you know which one of...
That sounds like a Brett Ratner move.
Yeah, well, hold on. How about this? Do you know what good buddy of Brett Ratner, like really good buddy, so good buddy that he showed up on the set, even though he tried to petition to be cast as Dollar Hyde. And even when he was told no, he still showed up on set to say hi and shake hands.
Jackie Chan.
More absurd.
I'm out.
Michael Jackson.
He would have made an amazing Dollar Hyde.
He would have. Yeah, he would have made a really good Buffalo Bill, too.
I do not believe that piece of trivia for one second.
Well, I didn't at first, and it's possible because IMDb apparently is notorious for bad trivia, but Brett Ratner knew Michael Jackson from when Brett Ratner was primarily a music video director.
I believe that they know each other and that maybe he even visited set, but not that he really wanted to be cast in the movie.
Yeah, well, hey, he was in The Wiz, right?
Right. I mean, that's pretty much a walk-off move right there.
Well, that's true. So, obviously, the character of Will Graham, the best actor by far, William Peterson. Hannibal Lecter, I would actually say that Brian Cox did a better job in Manhunter than Anthony Hopkins did in Red Dragon. Just for subtlety.
Yeah, I mean, he had less to do, but it worked way in his favor because he got to really knock it out of the park with what little screen time he had.
And you know that Anthony Hopkins was told, just Hopkins it up. Just make it as big and dramatic and weird as possible.
Yeah. It's so terrible.
Now, Francis...
I'm assuming they were making this before they figured out that the movie Hannibal was not going to be very well received.
Yeah, they must have, because it was just released a year later, so they had been making it really close to it being released. Actually, hang on just a second. I need to take a quick break, so hold on. Not in a Creepy Way, we'll be back after these messages. As always, we'd love feedback. Call us on our feedback hotline at 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169.
I'm really looking forward to talking about the television series. You know, after they milked what they could out of the character with Hannibal Rising, when I first heard that they were going to make a television series about Hannibal, I thought it was the most ridiculous thing I had ever heard and thought it was going to be so horrible, especially since it was going to be on NBC. But then when I found out who they were casting in the roles and that it was actually going to be mostly about the Will Graham dynamic, I got intrigued. Because I think that's really my favorite Hannibal Lecter storyline is the Will Graham, Hannibal Lecter duality. So having a whole television series to explore that sounded pretty good. So I'm glad I checked it out and I can't wait to talk about it. I hope we can figure out how to do a three-way podcast. But yeah, we'll get there.
And we're back. Okay, sorry about that.
No worries.
Okay, so Francis Dolarhyde. I'm going to give this one to Ralph Fiennes.
Nah, man. I mean, I think he gave a better performance. I don't like the character. I don't like what they did with the character as much as how they used him in Manhunter. Like you described it perfectly. They made him really sympathetic in this movie. And yeah, and I don't know if that was Ralph Fiennes' performance or if they were doing that on purpose to make Hannibal Lecter seem more menacing. But I thought as the main villain of the movie, I thought the Tom Noonan Francis Dolarhyde was way scarier.
Oh, I agree. He's totally scarier. I loved the tattoo, as you can imagine. I thought Ralph Fiennes' tattoo was fantastic. I thought that the aesthetic of the house was, I mean, Tom Noonan's Francis Dolarhyde's house was very 80s and kind of Michael Mann. And it was, you know, Red Dragon's Dolarhyde house was more of a gothic mansion.
Right. But Tom Noonan Dolarhyde, I mean, he seemed like such an alien. And then it was pretty on the nose to have like the big Mars landscape poster in his living room.
Oh, exactly. With his weirdo sunglasses and stuff. I love that. It did. It made him a complete alien. That's a perfect description. So Jack Crawford, always Dennis Farina. I mean, Harvey Keitel's character gets a little more meat in that he's really twisting Will Graham's arm to put himself out there. But his just sort of his flat delivery. I mean, Dennis Farina, you liked him. He was charming. That was part of why he was good at what he did.
Yeah, I mean, he was doing horrible things to Will. But yeah, he was so charming that you didn't hold it against him.
And you know what? He sounded like Dennis Farina. Because as it turns out, FBI agents can come from all over the world and be stationed wherever you want.
Yeah. It's time to live in a world where accents don't matter.
Exactly. Although, how about this? How about just a nod to the TOEFOP podcast? Perhaps if you have an actor if you have a character who is written to be Australian, there are probably Australian actors in Hollywood who can actually audition for the role. See also English and American people. Like if you need someone with an American accent, I'm sure there's someone with an American accent of all flavors you can choose from.
Indeed.
Yeah. Although, again, I like seeing Ewan McGregor show up in a movie as an American. At least better than I like, Kenneth Branagh in Dead Again, which is my example now of the worst American accent ever. Or, actually, that's not quite true because, of course, there's the whole Liam Neeson American accent, which is pretty classic.
Have you ever seen a show called Strike Back?
No.
It's a really great pulpy action show. So it's about sort of this British super team, super anti-terrorism team. They strike back against terrorists all over the world. They have an Australian actor playing an American guy, and his American accent is hilariously awful. It's like, cause he, whenever he gets stuck, he just throws in a buddy.
Oh, so you're saying he's like Colin Farrell in Miami Vice.
In a much more, enjoyable, funny way.
Yeah. Comedian Jordan Morris from Jordan Jesse Go does a great fake American accent. Even though he's an American guy, but it's pretty great. So search it out in all those Jordan Jesse Go episodes. So you won't really know it's coming because it's just something he throws out once in a while.
Oh, also, by the way, Strike Back. Great opening song.
Okay.
It's a great credit sequence.
Have you seen Phantom of the Paradise, by the way?
No.
Okay, because Jason and I think I'm going to strong arm him into doing that. It's the Paul Williams rock opera version of Phantom of the Opera from the 70s.
Wow.
So we'll see if it holds up at all or if it was ever good. I've only seen it once and I thought it was super campy. But now I've heard lots of interviews with Paul Williams and he intrigues me because he just wrote a book about how he was kind of a bag of crap in the 70s. He did way too many drugs and was a jerk to everyone he met.
He sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this movie.
Phantom of the Paradise. Yes, you have to. But, let me tell you, Paul Williams, something of a legend. He wrote Rainbow Connection and Rainy Days and Mondays, I think, and a bunch of Carpenter songs, a bunch of Three Dog Night songs. He was a songwriter to the stars. And he was in The Love Boat like a dozen times.
Wow. All-star.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, so, sorry. Back to Red Dragon. Reba McLean, definitely Emily Watson. Freddie Lowndes, definitely Philip Seymour Hoffman. Molly Graham, I call it a tie for not getting much to work with. And Mary Louise Parker didn't really do anything that impressed me any more than Kim Grease did. Thought it was always nice to see Anthony Held as Dr. Chilton. Now, unfortunately, here's a big difference between the two movies. Manhunter, budget of $15 million. Box office, $8.6
million. Yeah, but that's in what, 1986 dollars?
Yeah, well, okay. So it lost $7 million in 1986 dollars. That's great.
It's like pocket change.
Yeah. Red Dragon, budget $78 million. And it shows. Box office, $209 million. So they were really riding Silence of the Lambs wave. That's why they had to get it out before Hannibal could stink up the joint anymore.
I am so upset with humanity.
Oh, come on. There was really no reason for this movie to be made except to, I guess they could package them all together. But when we get to Hannibal, we'll see how much Hannibal, whether it lives up to my disappointment originally. Of course, I didn't like that book. I was all in for Red Dragon and Silence of the Lambs as books. And then I read Hannibal, and I think I've said many times in this podcast, but I'll say again, Hannibal, the book, is what happens when an author gets paid a lot of money and spends a lot of time in places like Italy. So he can write about his vacation spot in Italy and then spend a lot of time talking about cheeses and food of all kinds because he likes that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't have high hopes.
Yeah, well, but it's got Ray Liotta, so you gotta love that. Also,
I do love that.
Hannibal, the movie and the book, if I remember correctly, has a pretty great opening sequence, like an action sequence for Clarice. So
pretty ballsy of them to recast Jodie Foster too.
Oh yeah. They saw their money train coming and they weren't going to let something like, an Academy Award winning actress, slow them down. So anything else on Red Dragon?
No, it was terrible.
Okay.
I was upset about it from the moment it ended. Bad. I mean, Manhunter is a little dated. It's very 80s, but it has a sense of style and it owns it. And Red Dragon is completely devoid of any style or substance. It's so hollow. It feels hollow all the way through. Ed Norton gives like the worst performance I've ever seen him in. It's if you take his milquetoast persona from Primal Fear, and that's all you get. That's his Will Graham.
Well, this will make you maybe justify some of your feelings. Ed Norton said that he took every dollar of this movie and put it right into 25th Hour. So this was literally a paycheck movie for him.
Yeah, it showed.
Now, have you seen 25th Hour?
Yes.
And do you remember liking it?
Yeah, I do.
Me too. I was just intrigued by the whole notion of, you know, the day before you go away in jail for 7 years. And that's why I think where I first learned that, oh yeah, most people don't actually go to jail right away from their trial. So.
Yeah. The biggest thing I took away from that movie was his girlfriend's name was Naturelle.
Was that Rosario Dawson?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think I noticed that. Hey,
so weird.
Rosario Dawson. She's kind of cute.
She's in Daredevil.
The TV show.
Yes.
And is it good?
I'm about halfway through it, and it is great.
Cool. I saw the trailer that showed none of the actual Daredevil outfit that we're used to, just the black mask kind of Daredevil. Almost.
Yeah, I think that's going to be all of the entire first season.
Well, cool.
Vincent D'Onofrio is like the best kingpin. He's so great.
Oh, excellent.
I'm using it as a palate cleanser between episodes of Hannibal.
Okay. We should actually see the Ben Affleck Daredevil for the podcast at some point.
I'd be happy to do it. I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it either. Although, I mean, I could see it wasn't the greatest movie, but I kind of liked some of the things it did. I liked his sort of, you know, echolocation or whatever, his blind sight. Well, how do they treat that in the movie? Do they do you go inside Daredevil's head at all?
They're really subtle about it. Yeah, they don't talk about echolocation at all. They just kind of they hint at it. I mean, he definitely is. I think they call him gifted. But they don't go into details.
Which is good. You shouldn't have your heroes explained. Oh, by right. The way, I think you said this. At least I'm going to credit you with it. I think it was about the Lego movie, but we just saw the Lego Justice League movie. Or who knows, maybe it's one of the Lego Justice League movies. But Lego really has the best angle on Batman ever.
I haven't seen any other ones, but the Batman in the Lego movie was hilarious.
Well, the Batman in the Justice League movie, he is so great because he is so bitter about Superman.
Yeah.
He just hates Superman. And this is like for children, and it's like, oh, I know that guy was always a bad guy, blah, 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 blah. Turns out it was Bizarro that, yeah, anyway. Yeah, any excuse to dog on Superman, the Batman gets is perfect.
Yeah, that seems like it'd be real life.
Yeah, because Batman is smart and Superman is pretty dumb, and yet godlike powerful.
Yeah.
Anyway, so next week, Silence of the Lambs. Oh, here's a little, I keep pushing back that 1 year anniversary. It might be just be the first 100 episodes, the retrospective, because I'm listening to the old podcast, trying to find little nuggets to supplement the rest of the little things I had squirreled away here and there. Not nearly enough. I'm trying to be more careful now that I'm editing to keep some of the fun stuff. Like before, I was just keeping fun stuff that I took out of episodes, and now I'm taking clips of fun stuff that I left in episodes also. But the 2001 podcast, you know, the dog barks all through the podcast. I'm like, oh my God, it was awful. Also, I think I earlier told you, but very first episode, The Electric Grandmother. I edited it I took all the pauses out of it so much so that it sounds like it's being played at like 1.5 times speed. So that's
funny. I don't remember thinking that when I listened to it, but
yeah. Plus it's only like 20 minutes long.
It was short.
Yeah, it's
super, it was short.
So was, like, I think Red Lights was really short, and we didn't really branch out until, like, much over an hour, until later on. But I still think one of my favorite things, people still, here and there, because I'm saying, hey, you know, or they say, yeah, I listen to whatever podcast. I'm like, oh, so what do you think? Oh, it's great. This one in particular I really liked. Which one is that? Ah, The American. I'm like, oh, what'd you like about it? And to a person, they're always like, yeah, all the hair talk.
All the hair talk?
We took a 10-minute tangent into barbershop etiquette.
Oh, barbershop talk.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, it's
funny.
Yeah, it was pretty great, especially for not really being planned. So that's always, we actually end up during Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, we take a little tangent off to talking about the death penalty. Because Travis is a guest on that one too. And since he is currently living in Boston, he gets to see the, Sarnierov trial through a different little lens.
Interesting.
Yeah, so we have three different views on the death penalty. And so that's kind of fun. You know, light topics like that. And I think that's actually it. I think I am done. So.
Yeah, I'm all set.
Any walkout lines for Red Dragon?
No.
Excellent.
Oh, fuck Red Dragon.
Okay, that's good enough. Anyway.
I don't think I'll be quoting Hannibal Lecter in any of these movies.
Probably not. Yeah, I actually looked
maybe
up
that. Maybe I can pull out a good Gong Li quote from Hannibal Rising.
Oh, so sorry about your sister.
Oh, do you have time? Speaking of inappropriate Asian comments, do you have time for a quick story?
Of course. Is it a recordable story?
If you'd like.
Okay, yes, absolutely.
Jennifer was in the store with our two girls, and an older lady, not like grandma old, but like older than us, so somewhere between us and our parents, stopped to tell her that the girls she had in her cart were very cute. And very pretty little girls. And, you know, Jennifer's like, oh, well, thank you. And then the lady asked if they were part Asian, which is an unusual question, because even though they are a quarter Korean, you know, they have very light hair and blue eyes. So Jennifer was pleasantly surprised to be able to claim some Asian heritage for them, and said, why, yes, they are. And then the lady said this, I thought so. I could tell their eyes were a little chinky.
Oh my God. Oh, that is, well, first of all, it's not even true. And second of all, it's appalling.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Oh, like my.
Yeah. I asked Jennifer how she responded. She said she didn't say anything. She just looked at her, and the old lady just kind of dotted away. Like, was she trying to be mean? She's like, no, she wasn't. She didn't think there was anything wrong with what she said. But she was being complimentary.
Yeah. Oh, my. Do you remember when Asiana Air flight had to do an emergency landing? Or no, it wasn't an emergency landing. It was just they missed the runway in San Francisco from maybe 2 years ago. They actually hit the end of the, because you're almost landing in the water in San Francisco. So they came in like too low and too slow. And they ended up like dragging their tail as they landed. And so they had to they kind of spun out, I think. And then there was the rescue crew came as they were, everybody was like debarking the plane in the emergency slides. And in all of the foam sprayed on the plane and all of the people like sliding out of the slides, the only person that died in the, what was basically a plane crash, was this poor teenager that got run over by a fire truck.
Yikes.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I think it was a local news where the news reader was saying, you know, that they've released the names of the cockpit crew aboard the Asian Air flight. And as she's reading it, you're like, and she's not getting, she's not understanding it because she's a purely a news reader, you know.
We have new information now also on the plane crash. KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Tu Lo, Ho Li Fook, and Bang Ding Ao. The NTSB has confirmed these are the names of the pilots on board Flight 214 when it crashed. We are working to determine exactly what roles each of them played during the landing on Saturday.
Tonight, we want to take a moment and say that we are sorry. Earlier today, during our noon newscast, we misidentified the pilots in the Asiana Airlines crash. We made several mistakes when we received this information. First of all, we never read the names out loud, phonetically sounding them out. Then, during our phone call to the NTSB, where the person confirmed the spellings of the names, we never asked that person to give us their position within the agency. We heard this person verify the information without questioning who they were, and then we rushed the names onto our noon newscast. Within the last few minutes, the NTSB issued this statement, quote, "The National Transportation Safety Board apologizes for inaccurate and offensive names that were mistakenly confirmed as those of the pilots. A summer intern acted outside the scope of his authority when he erroneously confirmed the names of the flight crew on the aircraft. We work hard to ensure that only appropriate factual information regarding an investigation is released."
It was appalling. And the fact that she read it like cold and straight was just the worst ever.
I assume she got fired.
I don't think so. I think it was like one of those honest mistakes. Somebody got fired. Whoever put the story in the teleprompter got fired. But anyhow, send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.